Football Elite coming at you. Another wonderful podcast. I am Jeff Manns. By the way, podcast made available by FantasyGuru.com. Just lowered our price. Rest of the season package, $19.99. Get everything we offer, including access to us on this very podcast. By the way, I am Jeff Manns at Jeff_Manns on Twitter, the Jeff Manns on Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, and the like. Ray Flowers, though, he's really the star of Fantasy Guru's baseball package. How are you, Ray?
Whew, I'm all right, Jeff. I am battling gardeners. I'm battling electrical workers.
Steve?
I'm sometimes, yeah, it's
Steve Gardner.
Messy. Steve Gardner, yes. No, not Steve Gardner. He's too nice a guy to ever battle.
I know.
Could you imagine actual gardeners?
Yeah. Could you imagine getting in a fight with Steve Gardner from the USA Today?
No.
I don't think if you rank all time nicest people in the world. Like, I think Steve Gardner would literally be the guy. Like, he would be a one seed.
He'd be right behind me. Yeah, you're right.
No, get out of here. You wouldn't. You would be like, you're nice, but you'd be like a four seed. Let's be honest with the. I'd be somewhere in the 8 and 9, I have a feeling. But nevertheless, a lot to get to today. It seems like a lot's happening in fantasy baseball. Let's go through that. And by the way, follow Ray Flowers at Baseball Guys on Twitter and, of course, over at fantasyguru.com. Where we're adding new stuff every day. We just added a brand new weekly preview, courtesy of Rob Povia, one of our staff writers at Fantasy Guru. You know, added that to the package, which is pretty exciting. It's only $19.99 for the rest of the year, which is a great price, and you get access to everything: chats, live streams, podcasts. Not just this one. This one's free. You guys know that, but a lot of expert and strategy podcasts there as well. So I'm excited about the weekly preview, though. It was very well done by our guy, Rob.
Yeah, that new package for $19.99 includes everything, including the VIP chat room. So yeah, people, you know, instead of sending a note on Twitter and hoping someone sees it, you actually go in the chat room and you get an answer. You can get an answer that's more than 280 characters. So that's great. But, yeah, the article by Rob, really good. It's a great addition. We're happy to have it. We should have it. That'll be out, I think, on Saturdays, Jeff. Is that the plan for the
– Yep. Yeah. For the week ahead, too. So we'll get two-star pitchers and, you know, who's playing where? You know, our hitters in Coors Field, who's playing five games, six, seven, pitcher rankings on top of that. So it's very exciting for sure and a lot of great stuff there. And, again, rest of the season package. We talk fantasy baseball literally every single day at Fantasy Guru. So make sure you guys get there. But, Ray, let's see if you agree with this sentiment.
No.
I know, right? Already. I believe right now we sit here mid-May, and it is officially the dog days now. I feel like the weather has changed enough. I know some people in the Northeast and Midwest will say no, but I feel like something happened because in my – I'm only in six leagues, granted, but in my six leagues, the waiver and fab bidding this week was way down.
Mm-hmm.
Dramatically, like it was halved, and granted, some people have lost their money and have spent a lot of money already in the first 6 weeks of the season. But it just felt like the action was down. Twitter talk on about free agency and fab a little bit down. I wouldn't say it's down that much, but I noticed it in my leagues, and this is the beginning. This to me, however it started for everybody is either great, mediocre, or terrible. There's an opportunity here for those of us paying attention, those of us, you know, understanding the developments, the, you know, prospects being called up, the injuries, timelines for injuries, where we stand in certain categories. There's an opportunity for us to start leapfrogging a lot of people who will be going on vacations, kids getting out of school, going outdoors, doing yard work and the like.
Sorry, I was taking a hit off my whiskey.
Wow.
Yeah.
It would be so great if you were doing whiskey, by the way.
Yeah, I actually have it over in the corner. I should probably grab it. I always joke around on the Rays Rundown podcast. I'm doing it Saturday morning, so I'm not drinking the whiskey. But I could be doing this one. This is afternoon.
Oh, dude, I'll be honest. All I see is you partying on the weekends. And I'll fully admit that I basically don't like you on the weekends.
Yeah.
Your life compared to mine is absolutely surreal. You're like a rock star. You're like Vince Neil. Mm-hmm. In the 80s,
right?
And I am I guess I'm Bill Gates of the 80s, where nobody cared, you know. 90s, everything kind of turned around, which I'm still hoping for. Maybe someday I'll turn it around, but your life seems a lot better than mine.
I'm just hoping to get the hair back, you know, from the 80s, the hair bands.
That I doubt.
Well, yeah, like, and you're right. I think that in some respects I've had a good weekend, you know, Cinco de Mayo last weekend and all that. The waking up at 6:45 in the morning and immediately jumping into chat rooms and doing, you know, that sometimes my lady friend looks
life out of this though. That's different.
Yeah, yeah. But sometimes my lady friend looks at me, she's like, "What are you doing?" I go, "I gotta go get some emails." And she's like, "Ugh."
I know.
Yeah. 7 in the morning on a Saturday and I'm doing that. But yeah, I think that you're right about the larger picture here, Jeff, when you're talking about being able to take advantage of things. And I think that we're running into a couple of things. One, the weather's warming up. Two, there's, you know, kids, families starting to plan things like you talked about.
Yep.
There's other sporting events. We had the Kentucky Derby going, the NFL draft. Like, people are starting to get their attention diverted. And if it's not a sexy, over-the-top name getting called up, like, the more minor stuff doesn't really rate much anymore. Like, you know, John Means is sitting out there on the waiver wire. Who cares? Well, you should. You know, Martin Perez, is he a sexy young guy? No. Is he someone you should be talking about? You know, Brian Goodwin. Is anyone paying attention to Brian Goodwin who stepped
ooh,
up?
Ooh, interesting one, yeah.
Yeah, you know what I mean? So it's at that point when you're talking about Fab, these aren't sexy names. These aren't exciting names. These aren't Baseball Prospectus top 50. You know, these are just kind of guys. But if you're paying attention, I think now is a very good time to take that next step and take an advantage over folks.
Brian Goodwin is a great example of just here's something with the way fantasy baseball is today. And we're going to talk Martin Perez. I definitely want to get into him, Descalfani, some of these pitchers that have changed some things and whether or not we're going to see it. And we'll get to some news as well, some demotions, promotions, minor leagues. We'll get some Ohtani thoughts in here too. But Goodwin is that very interesting player right now in that if you added him a couple weeks ago, and I'll fully admit, 3 weeks ago I saw some people like adding him, like, oh God, what a bunch of losers, right? I'm like, oh, wasted money. And then I'm thinking, holy cow, the impact he's having on your batting average is really phenomenal. And trust, as a daily player, somebody who's in tune with every single day of fantasy baseball, man, these guys that are getting a hit a day, two hits a day, they're few and far between. They're just not – 250, 260 hitters are pretty good. They're almost a net positive for us these days compared to back in the day, a 250 hitter you'd think was a dunce. But not so much. A guy who's hitting 320, Ray, that's a dramatic impact on our in our 5x5 leagues with batting average.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And it goes not just the batting average. It goes beyond that. Back on April 1st, I added him in Tout Wars because I had Yoenis Cespedes placed on the disabled list.
Is that so only? No, that's a mixed league, isn't it?
That's a mixed league, 15-team mixed league.
Okay.
I got him for 69 out of 1,000. If I'm not mistaken, I think the next highest bid was 17. Okay, so I quote-unquote overpaid. But in 31 games, he's not only hitting .323, he's got a .405 on-base percentage, and this is an on-base percentage league. So I've got you know, an all-star caliber on-base percentage guy, got a 900 OPS. He hasn't run as much as I would have expected. He only has one steal. But the fact is, he's played almost every day. He, like you said, he's hitting over .320. He's got over .400 on-base percentage. He's got the 900 slugging percentage. You know, if he were to play a full season doing what he's doing right now, he'd score 100 runs. I mean, he has been really, really good. And those type of sneaky pickups when, you know, talented guys fall into full-time roles, in this case when Justin Upton went down, those are the kind of under-the-radar additions that really make a big difference. Carter Kieboom comes up, he goes down. You know, people want to spend all their money on the youngsters coming up, and sometimes the 28-year-old veterans that get a chance kind of get overlooked.
Absolutely, and the guys in categories like the batting average category that get overlooked. You know, people, we are so conditioned. Those of us who have been playing fantasy baseball for so long, we're so conditioned to look for home runs, strikeouts. It's just the way it is, but the most net, it's like looking for water nowadays. It's like water's everywhere, right? I mean, it's a natural resource in fantasy baseball. Everybody has power. There are no more people that don't have power, except maybe Andrelton Simmons. No, other than that, there's power everywhere, and there's strikeouts everywhere. You look at some of these guys, every day I do the pitching breakdown, and you're looking at like 10 K per nine. It's like, what? Like, Yu Darvish is a great example. Now you're so in tune, you'll know the answer to this, but real quick, where do you think Yu Darvish ranks among strikeout leaders in Major League Baseball this year?
Are you asking me, or are you just yes. that floating? I'm going to say he's definitely top 10. He's probably top 5 in terms of strikeout rate per nine.
Now, see, I'm not talking about strikeout rate because we don't – most leagues don't do strikeout rate. The answer is 57th in Major League Baseball. He's not even a top 50 strikeout, but the rate is fantastic. So people will say, well, he's giving you strikeouts. Is he, though? Because he's not. He's not. I do have Darvish in the league, and I am embarrassed to admit that because I don't like him. And I think I'm watching him pitch, hanging every slider, can't find the strike zone, getting just mashed. He hangs everything. So the fact that every now and then he'll run into some strikeouts means jack squat to me because I think he's a Hammond Ager fantasy pitcher. He is a nothing, in my opinion, Yu Darvish. And the only thing he's got is a K per nine. And if you look at the K per nine, you're like, yeah, pretty good. Like you said, top 10 in the league maybe. Well, possibly. But I'm not worried about K per nine. What's his total strikeouts? He's not lasting long enough in games, and he's getting destroyed. He's a 1.7 whip. He's got 5-something ERA. Even his XFIP is like over five.
He's walking 7.5 guys per nine. It's hideous. Yep. Yeah,
he's awful, but people will be like, well, strikeouts. You got to hold him for the strikeouts. No, you don't. Everybody strikes somebody out now. Everybody. Josh Smith strikes some guys out. Everybody strikes people out because they're so – home runs are everywhere. Strikeouts are everywhere. Those are two resources that you can fall into easily. Now, to win a fantasy league, what you need – perceptually, everyone's like, oh, I need speed. Okay, but that's very precious. Speed is like, you know, like – plutonium or something, you know, I'm like, you can get an ounce of it, you're lucky. But batting average, runs, ERA, you know, the wins, like these are categories that are going overlooked here in 2019 that just aren't being attacked, and you win those categories with the Brian Goodwins of the world. That's
we had a guy in the chat. I assume it's a guy, could be a lady, someone in the chat room earlier.
This is why I say we should have naked pictures of everybody, just so we know. It should be full frontal nudity, all of our avatars at fantasyguru.com. It would make things a lot easier to know than, man.
There's no way you wouldn't Photoshop your junk. No way. Someone was in there and they were like,
fit it in the avatar.
Yeah, that's what I meant, Jeff, of course. Yeah. Someone said, well, you know, I've got Shaw and Dozier at second base and that's rough. And I said, yeah. He said, I've been playing Cesar Hernandez and it's killing me. And I said exactly what you said. I said, Cesar Hernandez hasn't been great. Mm-hmm. Okay. But he's hitting .293. He's on pace for 15 steals. He's not killing you.
No.
Like, you're not getting ahead. I understand. And it's not sexy. I understand. But that goes exactly to what you're talking about. A middle infielder hitting .290 plus on pace to steal 15 bases, it could easily be 20. That's not falling behind. You just have to find your power in the other spots, which, as you noted, is very easy to do. So it is interesting to see sometimes the way people categorize their players. And I think, frankly, those guys like Cesar Hernandez because they aren't 2020 guys, because they're not on ESPN all the time. People sometimes miss the value of those type of players.
I think that we need to do a full show here on Fantasy Baseball Elite all about the correlation stats, because like Cesar Hernandez is one, a good one, because on base and batting average is fantastic. He's never going to give you that much power. I thought the 15 home runs was an anomaly last year. But the problem with him is even the runs scored. He's got 16. Because he's hitting lower in the lineup,
yeah,
that average and on base isn't really being put to use.
Right.
He's getting stranded all the time. I notice it a lot because I'm always hoping – I stack Phillies a lot in DFS, and I'm like, I'm hoping for Segura – Harper and Hoskins to get back up, and you know that the bottom of the order is just not producing. So I think that's the issue, one of the main issues with Cesar. If we had more runs scored, if he showed a little bit more pop and maybe ran a tiny bit more, we can get, there's a little more value out of that batting average. But right now it's an isolated category, unfortunately. But yeah, and so that's really where we're at. The next, you know, 4 to 8 weeks is really about effort with all of our leagues. And just get out there, stay on top of your categories, people. Stay on top of things. Don't let it get away from you. Week two, you know, we all let our guard down because it's such an ultra-long season. But you just have to be proactive. Keep on top of it. Everybody, you're going to have injuries. You're going to have slumps and things like that. Just manage the team right. Get players in for when others go down. Be on top of when guys are coming off the DL, the matchups every single week. And, you know, pay attention to that forecaster that we have over at Fantasy Guru, and you should be in a better shape, or at least, you know, all you want to do is position yourself that you can – it's like the Kentucky Derby. All you have to do is position yourself so that the guy who wins can get disqualified. Oh, no, not, you don't want that. You want to be able to close. You want to be, you know, be in the top four going into the stretch in September, because September is just chaos. And if you stay ahead of that chaos, lots of things could happen. If you're an ace, you're dead. You're ninth, you're dead. But if you're in, you know, second, third, fourth place, even if you're not winning your league, you're in contention. We can help you close out that championship. So just stay on it over these next few weeks. Let's talk about some pitching here, Ray Flowers, because okay. – I've got strong thoughts. Martin Perez, let's begin with him. You brought him up already. Had 9 Ks the other day against the Blue Jays. A nice outing. I won some money with Martin Perez in Daily Fantasy. I am maybe the number one anti-Martin Perez person in the world. I've been, I hate to say since he was a prospect, because he's a highly touted prospect.
Never been wrong, Jeff, until the last month.
Exactly. So. Exactly. But here's the thing, and I used him in DFS for the first time, I think, in my life. Who knows if I did, you know, years ago, but I used him against the Blue Jays in this outing. And one of the thing with Martin Perez, and you know, that we're seeing, it's not just his 5x5 numbers. He is a different pitcher. It you can't compare who this is to the guy that was in Texas for all those years, and even as a prospect, because for one, he doesn't throw a four-seam fastball hardly at all anymore. He was throwing it 50% of the time. He throws a cut fastball, which he never threw one time in Texas. He's throwing that almost exclusively 40% of the time here in Minnesota. And he's throwing he does throw a four-seam fastball, but it's 10 to 15% max ever, and it's got 95-mile-an-hour velocity. The velocity's come out of nowhere. It's a 2 to 3 mile-an-hour spike on that. So everybody who scouts Martin Perez, and one of my things with pitching, Ray, is that I think hitters, for the ball being juiced and them being stronger and all that, I think one of the biggest reasons for such increased offense in Major League Baseball is that the use of video and analytics and knowing what a pitcher throws, what kind of break and velocity it has, where they're trying to locate it, where they want to locate it, how they want to attack you as a hitter. I think hitters are just sort of had a step above pitchers. So they kind of knew what was coming when it was coming. It's just a matter of getting it centered. When a guy changes his pitch mix like this, like Martin Perez did, hitters are like, I have no flipping idea who this guy is or what to expect. And I think he's at a huge advantage.
Yeah, I actually wrote about this last week, the baseball and batted ball. And I looked at because everyone's talking about the ball being juiced and all that. And I went through and laid out a bunch of examples, or I guess additional information, suggesting that it's not just the baseball. And part of it is what you're talking about, Jeff. It's that hitting has changed. The game has changed. And to say it's just the baseball, it's not true. Guys throw harder. Guys have better analysis. You know, guys have changed their swing paths, all these kind of things, and they all go into it. In the case of understanding Perez, it's so odd because, like you said, he's 28 years old and all of a sudden he could throw the ball 3 miles an hour harder. What? Like, this just doesn't happen. This is why analysis is so difficult to do, because that doesn't happen. Okay, it happened. Fine. Let's deal with it. For whatever reason, mechanically he made adjustments. Okay, fine. Now he's throwing a pitch that he's never in his entire life ever thrown before a third of the time, more than a third of the time. That doesn't make any sense either. So he's pitched for 20 years and had no idea how to throw this pitch, picked it up a couple of months ago, and now it's the best cutter in baseball? Really? The game's not that simple, okay? He has made changes. It's been huge. I mean, look at his wOBA against on the cutter this year is 131. Guys are hitting 100 off it. They're 6 for 60 on the pitch. So even if it's a great pitch, that level of success is not sustainable. Mariano Rivera didn't do that well. I mean, that you can't. That's just not that sustainable. So he is someone to pay attention to. He's definitely someone to take a look at. The improvements in velocity and the increase in that pitch is phenomenal. So maybe after, for, you know, 6-7 years being crap, awful, below average, now there's actually something to look at. But we don't want to get so carried away that we think now he's on the level of stardom. He's not there, but he certainly is someone that we should be talking about now that we weren't really 2 months ago.
Yeah, we have to be talking about him. I think he should be added in all formats, 12 teams or whatever. But I don't think, like you said, temper your expectations, because as soon as the league gets wind of this, as soon as the league and advanced scouting catches up. Now, trust me, advanced scouting isn't as good as y'all think, because there's some bad advanced scouting out there, teams that are built just terribly. Ted and I talked about catchers and stuff on the SiriusXM show the other day, right? And like, they're, you know, with all the advancements in pitch framing and everything else, they're still trotting out Wellington Castillo, who you wonder why Ronaldo Lopez and Lucas Giolito have flashes of brilliance and then are awful at times. You look at their catchers and how they frame pitches and the negative effect they have, and I mean, it just telegraphs it right there, but I digress. I think he has to be added. The new pitch mix confusing people. Velocity plays up his secondary offering. So the guy's interested. But to think that he's just going to ride it out, who knows? Now, I could point to Esteban Loaiza, cut fastball, same kind of thing. Number two in Cy Young back in 03. R.A. Dickey, who had the knuckler, just worked for whatever reason back in 06? No, 2010 maybe, or 2011. 12, whatever it was. It feels like it was a long time ago. I guess it wasn't that long ago. He's old. This happens. It happens every year. Pitchers break out because they mix their pitches differently. They add some velocity, mechanical differences, whatever. They add a pitch, whatever it may be. There's been
Matthew Boyd has done the same thing. He's up to his slider usage 300%.
Right.
You know, and so it happens, yeah.
And also uses a lot of pine tar on that, maybe, as most of the Tigers pitchers do. Another team that just somehow improved spin rate, like almost, I think we're 7 starters all for the Tigers this year that each one to a man has improved their spin rate from 2017 or 2018. Interesting. I'm sure it's just totally random, right?
Totally.
Sure. It's a force of that. Trevor Bauer doesn't think so, by the way. But yeah. Nevertheless, so I mean, Perez is an ad for me right now. And I hate it. And you got to understand, the level I hated him was huge. He won me a lot of money stacking against him his entire career. But I'll ride it out for a little bit. And it didn't cost you much if you already got him. At this point, I'm probably going to be more expensive than I'd like to. Another guy that is balling out right now, and that's Anthony Descalfani. Ray Flowers, a guy who also has improved velocity, but also mixing in his pitches a little bit differently. Your thoughts on Descalfani?
Yeah, he was, as I think the listeners probably know, my breakout pitcher of the year that no one was talking about was Marco Gonzalez. And he was horrible his last time out, but overall he's been really, really good. One of the 5 guys in running to be the breakout pitcher of the year for me was Anthony Descalfani. So I've got him in a lot of leagues. I hope a lot of the listeners have him too because of that advice. And, you know, in this preseason player profile, I broke down things and said, look, it's really as simple as this. If he can hold on to the strikeout rate that he flashed in the second half last year and the home run rate comes down, he's an effective pitcher. You know, it sounds stupid, but it's really that simple. And in the early going, his swinging strike rate is up 1.5, which has led to the increase in the strikeout rate. I don't think he's a 10.5 strikeout inning guy. I think he's more of 1-for-1, but still, that's a much better mark than the, you know, 7.5, 8 that he was floating at the first 4 years of his career. And secondly, the home runs have come down a bit. There's still more room to improve here. And that's something to watch with Descalfani, because his fly ball rate is way up. And given his type of game, it's understandable. You know, if you're trying to elevate the pitch and all that, the strikeout rate can go up, but you leave yourself more open if you make a bad pitch to the home run. He needs to bring the fly ball rate down, because the ball is going to start to fly a little bit better when it gets warmer in Cincinnati, and that's not going to be a good place to be if you're a Descalfani owner. But to date, the return has been very good, and he has a good arm. He's had a lot of starts and stops with health, Jeff. But if he can make 30 starts, he's a usable mixed league piece.
Yeah, absolutely. And when we talk about pitch mix, which I love to look at, and you throw in that four-seam fastball, it's got, you know, pretty solid horizontal movement, really impressive vertical.
Are you reading that right?
Indeed I am. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, some analysts in our community don't read tables and charts, right? It's pretty amazing how that seems to work. But nevertheless, so yeah, he's got good movement on the pitch, and he's throwing it more. He's throwing it 50% of the time to date. And when, you know, sometimes pitching isn't as complicated as we make it. You know, you look at some guys and you just throw your best pitch. You know, you just make your throw your best pitch and you throw it more often. All right. Oh, it's not that hard. And especially when it generates softer contact and guys get out in front or behind on it or what have you. And that's sort of the case with Descalfani. Do I think it continues? Not really. You know, no telling how this will go into the dog days when it's really warm in Cincinnati and we got, you know, Great American Ballpark with 80, 90 degree weather and the ball's just sailing out. So leaving the ball up is definitely a red flag for Descalfani too. So take that for what it's worth. If you had to choose between those two on the waivers, which one would you choose?
Descalfani or who? Jeez.
Perez.
Yeah, I'd go Descalfani. I would. But Perez is interesting. I agree with you, though. I think this game is so much about adjustments. And when you attack hitters with something that's not expected, because everyone thinks after 7 years they've got Martin Perez totally locked down, they're all caught off guard. And so now as the adjustments start to make, as the word gets around, we'll start to see, you know, how he adjusts. So I'd go with Descalfani, but both of them, as you noted, worthy of picking up.
Fair enough. Let's go to – I want to talk about another guy who's got a lot of hype right now. And, you know, really, really good outing the other night, and that's Chris Paddock, the rookie for San Diego Padres. You know, strikeouts are out of this world. He's been very, very solid, well over 10 per 9 at this point. Chris Paddock's been fantastic. Mm-hmm. But now you want to talk about a guy who I want to publicly here on Fantasy Baseball Elite, I want to send flares out into the sky. It's a lot of problems with Chris Paddock right now going forward. I mean, you realize that this guy, you look at some of the basic numbers of a 176 batting average for balls in play, right? That's pretty amazing. You look at also, and he just lowered it. He was at 40. Nearly 44%, but his outing the other day against the Mets was so good that it worked. But 40.9% fly ball rate also. On top of that, 47.3% hard contact rate, 95 miles an hour plus. Listen, I'm no scientist, Ray Flowers, but you're getting very lucky with the balls that have been put in play to the point that he has a 129 batting average against, right? And now you're telling me that you're elevating the ball, getting fly balls 41% of the time. And, oh, by the way, nearly 48% of those are hard contact. And your swing and strike is solid at 12%, very solid. But it's not out of this world. You know, it's nothing that other players. I see regression all over Chris Paddock right now, Ray Flowers. What do you think?
I wrote about him Tuesday at Fantasy Guru, and I laid out kind of the workload argument in addition to what you're talking about. I want to hit on that first.
Sure.
He missed 2017 with Tommy John surgery, came back last year and threw 90 innings. So in the last 2 years, he's thrown 90 innings. Mm-hmm. Okay. He's currently on pace for 170. All right. They're not going to let him throw 170 innings. It's not happening. Zero chance that happens. It's not happening. And there's quotes in the article from him, Paddock himself, and this is a direct quote. This year, my goal is anywhere from 130 to 150. Okay, that's the pitcher. Usually the pitcher is saying, hey, I want to throw 200, and the team has to pull him back. Paddock realizes that given his injury situation, he can't throw more than 150 innings, okay? How do they do this? I mean, it's fascinating. He's been so good, I think it's really gotten overlooked a little bit, Jeff. He hasn't thrown 92 pitches in a game.
Right.
92! Okay, so what are they going to do with him? Are they going to skip starts? Are they going to pull him out after four innings? Are they going to shut him down for 3 weeks? Like, how are they going to handle this? Because if he's only got 150 innings, and I think that's high because, again, he threw 90 innings last year. If he's only going to throw 150, how do they manage it? The problem with Paddock as an owner isn't when he's on the bump, is he going to be effective? To me, it's how are they going to manage this? Because if we think he's starting Thursday and you set your lineup Monday – and they tell us on Tuesday that he's not pitching this week, you're screwed. And that's going to happen. That is just going to happen. So that's a concern. And then in addition to the numbers that you mentioned, the outlandish batting average of balls in play and those kind of things, guys get tremendous talent. He can miss bats. He doesn't beat himself with the walk. The control is excellent, all that stuff. But this is a phenomenal start that just simply can't be sustained.
And I mean, you dive even deeper. And quite honestly, as a fantasy owner of Paddock, and I'm a fan, I've been a fan of Chris Paddock, but I had going into this year, I had similar concerns, like the concerns you did with the workload, how much is he going to pitch, all that stuff. Here's the problem. If, well, not a problem, but it them limiting his workload could be the best thing for him by far and for fantasy owners, because there's no way, like there's no path to keeping this success. And we talked about it with Martin Perez and Des Galfani and pitch mix and stuff. This guy's got two pitches, everybody. I mean, is anybody, he's a fastball changeup guy. It's it. There's no nothing else. He's got a curveball that's pretty flat out terrible on a curse, but it's not good. So he barely throws it. It's fastball, it's changeup. That's all it is. All right. And it's great. He's, you know, intense. He's got the long, flowing, curly hair. It's fun. But man, you're relying on two pitches. With, you know, one with good movement, but there's been fastballs with great movement in the past that get shelled. And, you know, these two without much, you know, not a lot of break. It's not a slider. It's not a curveball. It's not a knuckleball like we talked about with Ari Dickey. It's not a knuckle curve like Mike Busey. It's nothing unique that hitters have never seen before. You're getting ultra lucky with the bad batting average for balls in play. You get the lack of innings that he's ever had. You're getting the extreme hard contact, which, by the way, folks, in case you guys aren't aware of like how it works, hitters don't, you don't hit the ball half to 48% of the time over 95 miles an hour and it's always right at somebody. That is a crazy lucky fortunate situation, okay, that those balls normally go out of the ballpark or go for extra bases. So he is living on the edge, Bon Jovi style, living on a prayer. Living on a prayer. But you know what I mean, it just is, it just, I don't see this. Like, Paddock, maybe, to me, he's probably going to be a dominating reliever someday, because I just don't see this repertoire hanging. And if it does, maybe he ends up being that 5-6 inning guy. But, well,
but that's, and that's, you know, inside baseball stuff that we don't talk about much. But since you brought it up, I'd love to hit on it for a sec, Jeff. The idea of fastball changeup. As a starting pitcher, it is extremely rare for you to be a dominant starting pitcher long term with two pitches. Extremely rare, and it's why all preseason when everyone was getting all excited about Michael Pineda, I kept saying nope, he's got two pitches, okay? And it's why I've always been reluctant with Robbie Ray, because he's got two pitches. When Robbie Ray gets ahead in the count, batters have no chance. He throws that slider, they can't hit it. When he's behind in the count, batters spit on the slider because they know he can't throw it over the plate. He's got one pitch, it's a fastball, and it's yippee-ki-yay. That's why all the time with Robbie Ray, with these dominant strikeout totals and these games where he's given up one hit, you look at his hard hit ball information and it's through the roof.
Yes.
Because if when he falls behind, he just gets hammered because he's got one pitch he can trust. He can throw for strikes. In the case of Paddock, his control is excellent. Right. And that helps mitigate this a little bit. He's not like Robbie Ray, who, well, I can throw a strike, right, but I can't control where the strike zone. Yeah. But it is extremely rare. It's not 1983. Okay. In 2019, it's extremely rare to have your two pitches as a starter be a changeup and a fastball. When you have a fastball and a changeup, you're Fernando Rodney and you work out of the bullpen.
Yep.
That, so people do need to understand that. Unless he adds another pitch, improves the curveball, adds something, a different look, in 2019, it's very tough to be successful with that two-pitch mix as a starting pitcher.
Sell high. Sell high right now in a redraft league. Keeper league, you can hold on to him because maybe he develops the curve, maybe, you know. A third pitch would go a long way to in longevity in his career and success in his career. But living this way, just not going to happen. And you're never going to have more value off Chris Paddock probably than he has now coming off that last start against the Mets. So I would at least shop him at the very, very least. Let's talk about some other news around Major League Baseball here, Ray Flowers. And the let's talk about the Nationals. They lowered the kaboom. Mm-hmm. Yeah. On Carter, huh? Mm-hmm. see everybody. Good
so original, yeah. It's so original, Jeff.
It's so this proud, guy man. Came up, and we were excited about him, and thought, okay, you know, another one of these Nationals prospects that sort of I hate to say five category, and you know, but you know, quality prospect to say the least, but just didn't do anything here. What do we safely cut him? How do we treat him in our season leagues here, right?
Yeah, and I issued a challenge on Twitter when this news came out. Oh. Because I had two people in particular. Dude? Yeah.
Fight somebody. Yes. You'll leg wrestle the dirty, greasiest man alive if you could, if they predicted Kiboom's numbers.
Only with mud. Yeah. No, these two, there were two guys on, and these were guys, two guys on Twitter that blasted me over and over again about Kiboom. The guy's the truth. He's the next Cody Bellinger, all this stuff.
Oh my God, really?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Two guys in particular.
Bellinger? Like,
yeah. That's one guy, he told me that one guy said he was going to be as good as Bellinger was as a rookie. And the, both the guys I had to mute for like 24 hours. So I got tired of hearing. It was like the one guy every 5 minutes was sending me some. And I issued a challenge. Where are you guys at now?
Ooh, yeah.
Where are you at now? I haven't heard anything since he got demoted. Kiboom played terrible defense. Terrible defense. Yeah. And he didn't hit. This is easy. I mean, this is an easy decision for the team. And it just a furtherance, and you know, Vlad Guerrero's not hitting. Not every rookie that gets called up hits immediately. And it's bad enough if that's the case, like it was with Kiboom. But every day you should, you know, I'm on Twitter all day doing shows, and you are too, Jeff. The beat writers are like, oh, another mistake. Oh, another mistake. Oh, another mistake. Like the beat writers themselves were calling for him to get demoted because his defense was costing the team wins.
Yeah.
So they made the right choice. This has nothing to do with Kiboom being a, you know, 25 home run hitter in the future. This is not to say you can't make the all-star teams, blah, 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 blah. But it's a yet another indication, which will be forgotten in 3 weeks when the next rookie gets called up, that the majority of these guys fail their first time around.
Yeah, Mike Trout. I mean, forget about that. You're right. The defense was really horrible. And Trey Turner's working his way back. What's the timeline? Another week or two? I mean,
he started hitting off the tee. So I would say two to three weeks just to be safe. But by the end of May, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, Kiboom, I don't know what you think, but based on what I saw, like, long-term, this is a second baseman, mm-hmm. you know, and I know they were playing him there in the minor leagues a little bit before the Turner injury, and then after Turner, then they moved, you know, him over, you know, just so he'd be well-versed, but that's what I saw, at least, out of him. But solid player, nothing wrong with that. You're not going to get anywhere striking out 16 times in 39 at-bats, though. That's not going to keep you around and playing shoddy defense whatsoever. So he gets demoted. Nick Senzel, though, gets called up, and that happened in between our free podcast here. But, you know, you're a Senzel guy, Ray Flowers. This mm-hmm. is one of those few prospects that you actually get excited about. People, yeah. Normally I could just – I don't – sometimes, Ray, you don't even know this, but you – I'll do solo podcasts, and I'll just pretend Ray's here. And I'll just say, hey, yes, I hate all the prospects. You know, I'll talk out of like a sock puppet
right.
or something. It's pretty easy. But Senzel's different for you. Explain to the listeners why.
Yeah, I know that's the case because someone this morning said, it's really cool to hear you be excited about a rookie. And I'm like, what is this, dude?
It's true.
People paint with – no, it's not true.
Yes, it's true.
It's not true.
True.
Last year when Juan Soto was called up, I spent 44% of my budget in Tout Wars to Adam.
That's not, man.
It's so, again.
Yes, that's different. Dude, it's different. It's not your analysis. Your analysis is different. Yeah, listen, and you were on Soto. I will not take that away from you at all, but bidding on a guy, dude, it's like me. I'll use anybody in DFS. Like, the guy could be named, and I was almost going to say Adolf Hitler, but I'll draw the line there. Joseph Stalin.
There you go. That's a big difference.
Joseph Stalin's playing shortstop for the Mets, and he's like minimum price on FanDuel. I'm like, he gets on base a couple times. What are you going to do? It's minimum price. What are you going to do? You know, I'll use anybody I need to win the league. Don't get me wrong. So I do not equate you bidding on Soto as your loving prospects. I know well.
I don't love prospects because the majority of them fail.
Yes.
It's not, it's just a
I'm not fact. Disagreeing with you. Okay. I think okay. that it's, okay. I don't, you're not wrong. That's okay. the problem. Okay. I agree that you're not wrong.
I picked up Griffin Canning in multiple leagues too, by the way, just to put it out there.
I think I'm using him tonight in DS. Yeah,
he should be against the Tigers. Look, yes, to go back to your Nick Senzel, I like him. I don't know if the Reds like him. Mm. And I say that because, I mean, you've seen this. Just to reiterate something that I was tweeting about earlier today. 5 games with the Reds. Nick Senzel has hit 2nd, 6th, 5th, 1st, 6th. They have no plan whatsoever with him. None. Which I don't understand. And what even makes me more interested in this is that I've had multiple people push back on me when I tweeted that out. well, so what? Look at his performance. I'm like, do you folks, have you ever played baseball? Like, no, you clearly haven't. Nobody does. Because hitting sixth, second, sixth, fifth, first, that doesn't help anyone. Okay, so the Reds are doing, they did the same thing with Votto. He's hitting leadoff, he's hitting second, he's third. They've done the same thing with Winker. They need to put a lineup together. And I would suggest, what do I know? But I would suggest Winker first, lefty, Senzel second, righty, Votto third, lefty, Suarez fourth, righty. How about that? How about that? Then we can not stop worrying about all those late inning situations with lefty, righty arms. How about that, idiots running that team? In terms of Senzel, I do love him. And you saw that in the couple of home runs he hit off Pomeranz, who's not a good pitcher. But Senzel's not a big guy, but he stays within himself. Okay, he's got a very stable approach at the plate, very sound, not much movement, lifts his foot up, puts it back down, none of these big leg kicks, no hand hitches, no timing mechanisms. He stayed within himself and hit both those home runs to the opposite field. And when you can drive the ball 375 feet to the opposite field in Major League Baseball, you're going to be have a long and productive career. And when you do it your first week in the bigs, how much confidence is that going to give the guy that he doesn't need to open things up? He doesn't need to try to cheat for pull power. He can just use the field and hit. He can play the infield. He can play the outfield. He's the hardest worker on the field. He's got a great personality. Everyone looks at him as a leader. Really do love him, Jeff.
I do too, and approach at the plate is huge. And don't underestimate those home runs against Pomeranz. Pomeranz is a, yes, junk pitcher at this stage of his career, but for a prospect, remember that everybody who makes the major league level, or a 95%, can smash a fastball. That's how you get to the major leagues. You got to be able to hit fastball, even a plus fastball, good movement, good velocity. You can hit a fastball, you'll probably get a cup of coffee, at least in the major leagues. When you're talking about Pomeranz and a big looping curve, that's a big dropper like that, you have, it's a patience thing. It's a time, like you said, you have to be disciplined to be on that pitch. Veterans will annihilate Drew Pomeranz at this stage, but for a prospect, rookie to come up and do it was very telling, was very, very good to see, and very positive impression, to say the least. And it's why his approach is on base percentage every single level he's ever played at. He's always threatened 40% on base percentage. He hits for a good average, makes that solid contact. You know, minor league numbers, not a ton of power. You're talking about 10 home runs in the Southern League, which actually is pretty darn good, all things being told. But, you know, 14 home runs in 2017, the most he's ever hit, which that translates to about 35 at the major league level. I say this every time, but I honestly do believe it's true. Who is the guy for the Pirates? Is it Brian with a Y, Robinson or whatever? Like, he came up and everyone's like, oh, he can't hit for power. I go, yeah, he'll hit 18 in the major league. So, I mean, I'm sorry. And everybody's like, what? And he hit his home run. That's what happens. Everybody hits for power. There is no such thing as no power anymore. Everybody hits for power in major leagues. If you, Brian Reynolds, that was his name.
No, yeah.
Everybody, his maximum home run that he ever hit, I think, was 10 at like single A. And I'm like, yeah, he'll hit 18. No problem. You give him 500, 400 bats, he'll hit 18 home runs. That's nope. Not, I'm not even worried about it. I guarantee you he'll hit that. So, but back when it comes to Senzel, are you worried about another demotion? I mean, obviously at this point it doesn't look like it because we're all excited right now. Right. But as we go on, you know, June, if he starts struggling and whatnot, is this a guy who, you know, they may send back down, not let him work through it at the big league level?
I'd be very surprised if that was the case. They've waited a long time for him. Part of that's obviously because of the health issues that he had last year. They fully anticipated him being a starter with this team by midseason at the latest last year.
Last year, yeah.
Yeah, and it all got messed up because of his health. So, no, I think he's up for good. I mean, now, if he pulls a Carter Kieboom and he's, you know, got a 35% strikeout rate and he's playing bad defense, you know, okay. But if he just performs as expected, which at this point should at least be as a league average player, at least. And I'm really expecting him to be more than that. What happens is this lineup all of a sudden could be scary good. They recently got rid of Matt Kemp. Okay, so they're starting to clarify things in the outfield. It's going to be Winker, Senzel, and Puig in the outfield. That's going to be the way they're going to rock it. They're going to welcome back Scooter Gennett here from his groin issue in a month or so. That gives them now Jose Peraza at short, leaves Jose Iglesias as that backup guy that they can use up the middle. He's been great to this point, but, you know, we know who he is. Same thing with Derek Dietrich. He's now a support piece. So, no, I think that this lines up perfectly. And I do think that he should end up in that one or two hole, though, as I noted, I'm not certain the Reds are going to quite stick with anything long enough for that to matter at the moment.
Why? What is the deal with Joey Votto leading off? Now, obviously, massive on base percentage, works the count, gets walks. I get it, theoretically. But is this telling that the team doesn't believe that he has any power left in the tank?
Well, I think it's one thing. David Bell, I think there's an interview where Bell was talking, and because the beat writers are like, kind of, hey, man, what's going on? You know, because they've covered this team for 10 years. You've never seen a lineup that's different every day unless people are hurt. And he basically said that he's doing everything he can to gain every advantage he can. He is spreadsheet baseballing the crap out of this.
Yeah.
Okay? And instead of worrying about people, instead of worrying about logic, instead of worrying about 150 years of how to play the game, he's pulling spreadsheets out and trying to gain a 1% advantage here and a 2% advantage there. And, you know, if you want to manage that way, I've said this the other day, said if you want to manage that way, that's fine. We might as well just have computer simulations for the season. Because at that point, you're totally discounting who people are. You're discounting personalities and, you know, psychology and all this. You're just throwing it out the window. Trying to jumpstart Joey Votto, okay. I don't know how putting him first after his being, you know, been in the big leagues for 13 years is going to change anything for Joey Votto. Like, to me, that's just dumb. He gets on base. Sure, hit him second. I know he's not a 35 home run hitter, but let's not put him up so he's got to think in his head, well, do I hit like Billy Hamilton used to and slap the ball to left field? Let's at least let him stay inside himself. Let's at least let him hit the doubles and everything that he's, you know, hit the ball in the gaps. Knock that guy that got on first in from first base on the double. So, no, I think that that's just grasping at straws. And, you know, players may not admit it or understand it directly, but they've all got to be thinking it at some level, don't they, Jeff? Like, there's no stability here.
Yeah, I think that I am pro manager getting the maximum output out of a player and building lineups in a way that, you know, either you're playing defense against the great pitching staff, and it's no longer just starting pitcher, it's pitching staff. I mean, the bullpen, hey, this team has three lefties out of the pen, so you can't stack lefties. Like, I'm all about that philosophy, but at the same time, I think you should for the most part be pretty stagnant with how and where these guys hit. I know baseball's a rhythm sport too. You get used to hitting certain guys in certain situations. And the reason we play 162 games and players get 500-600 opportunities, aka played appearances, is that they learn from mistakes. They realize, oh, it's a mental game. This guy did this. Last time I was in this situation, this happened. I'm going to get better by doing this, or I'm going to try to repeat that performance or whatever. And if you're constantly moving around everything, that's just, to me, you're treating these guys like ones and zeros, and it's all binary, and it's all just, you know, hodgepodge. And I don't think it works. I really don't. I'm about gaining an advantage, but doing it in a relative way to who these players are, what they're capable of over a long term. You know, don't look at it for each individual matchup necessarily. What's going to work the best for them long term? And I think that's where we're at right now. Speaking of, like, Matt Kemp, does he catch on anywhere, or is this just done with Matt Kemp?
I mean, I saw something the other day. Since he signed his huge contract, he's been traded or released four times.
It's amazing, yeah.
Yeah. But last year, he was still really effective. I know that this year he's dealt with some health and hasn't performed, but, I mean, I have to assume someone adds him. I don't know why they wouldn't. They pay him the major league minimum at this point. I mean, unless he's doing things that we're unaware of in the clubhouse, which I haven't seen any reports suggesting that's the case. I think he lands somewhere. I mean, is it anything other than a fourth or fifth outfielder? Maybe not. But I'm very surprised by that move by the Reds.
So would you hold on to him, wait and see where he years out?
NL only, I would hold him. Yeah, mixed league, I'd let him go.
Fair enough. The other interesting news from Major League Baseball happening tonight as we record this podcast, by the way, that is Ray Flowers. I am Jeff Mance. This is Fantasy Baseball Elite. Shohei Ohtani. He's back, Ray Flowers. Tommy John surgery for him. Not going to pitch, obviously, anytime soon, but he's back swinging the bat in the lineup, hitting third behind Mike Trout against the Detroit Tigers. Ohtani, let me just go on record, and I never believed in his bat, ever. I thought he was a pitcher that was faking it as a hitter. And he surprised me last year. I won't say he impressed me because, quite honestly, it was impressive that he was hitting so many bombs to center field, but I didn't like the approach. I didn't like his swing. I didn't like how the contact was being made. I know the results are fantastic and I'm wrong, but I have a hard time he lives up to what he did in 2018, Ray Flowers, especially coming back from his elbow surgery. But Angels are obviously very, very excited about his resurrection. They're paying him a lot of money and hitting him behind Trout. How do you feel about Ohtani as a fantasy player the rest of 2019?
Yeah, I'm very surprised that he's on a lot of waiver wires from the questions I've been getting. I think obviously he should have been drafted in mixed leagues. He should have been held on to. I've been holding on to him in NFBC, just having waste of bench spots. I thought, this guy had a 925 plus OPS. He was a 30-20 guy over 150 games last year if you extrapolate out his pace. He's a very good hitter. I think it's very heartening that the team didn't rush him back. He claimed he was ready 2 weeks ago. They were patient and let this play out a little bit. There's no pressure on him to pitch. Jeff Fletcher reported today that the GM, Billy Epler, directly addressed, well, do we have to start pulling Ohtani out of the lineup at some point to let him throw on the side? Like, are you gonna start working his arm up at the expense of his bat? And Epler basically said it won't be until late September or early October before he's ready to throw. So that should have no bearing whatsoever on his offense because the chance of the Angels still playing in October is pretty low. So basically, he's just going to be allowed to hit. And going back to the preseason, Vlad Sedler and I did, I did the player profiles, and Vlad and I did the Battle of the Experts. And he was very Justin Bour pro, and I was very anti because I said, look, when Ohtani's ready to go, he's playing every day. That's Bour and Albert Pujols then trying to play at first base. And, say what you want about Pujols. He's going to the Hall of Fame. He's getting paid $187 million in the bat. I really don't see him going to the bench. So I never understood the Justin Bour love. And I think that we've also seen those comments come out, too, that the plan now is for Ohtani to play the majority of the time. It's not for him to come out against left-handed pitching. He's going to play the majority of the time as long as his arm holds up at that DH spot. I'm really hopeful that we'll see a very good hitter. He may not be a 925 OPS. I mean, he may not run as much, who knows. But I think, Jeff, that he's absolutely an ad, and even in 10-team leagues, he's an ad all over the place. I really do like his overall game.
Add me to the Justin Bour, did not mind him at all. 3 home runs for the Angels. Batting average, bad, but .275 on-base percentage suggests there's a lot more to Justin Bour. And they played him a lot against lefties, too, and maybe suggest that they'll do Ohtani the same. I don't know what it is about Shohei Ohtani.
Well, no, we all have players like that we don't like, yeah. Jeff.
We do. But here's the thing is, I have a very, very serious issue, which I can't watch a guy that looks terrible. And no matter how much he produces, I just can't get over that myself.
Well, the approach is so different. Yeah, the Japanese swing and the pulling off the baseball and the opening up.
Stepping in the bucket, man. My high school coach would have
murdered
wrong. Me.
Yeah. I mean, even you and I have talked about Willie Mays, right? Willie Mays used to step in the bucket because guys, Bob Gibson, all these guys would bust him in. He stepped in the bucket, but he didn't open up. Ohtani just totally opens up and floats. Like, Mays stepped in the bucket and drove the ball with his hips. Ohtani opens his hips and his shoulders up and just gets the barrel to the ball. And it's amazing that he hits the ball 450 feet. I agree with you.
Yeah.
But he consistently did that last year. But I can understand looking at the mechanics and the approach and saying, man, you get this guy's timing off a little bit and he's going to be a disaster. We just didn't see it last year.
So, I mean, last year he only had 326 at-bats, 367 plate appearances. Did strike out 102 times. The contact was great. When he made contact, it was phenomenal. But it wasn't exactly Ichiro-esque in making that kind of contact. All arms, hitting the ball with all arms and barrel, and now he's coming off shoulder surgery. I mean, we got to worry about the fact that is he going to be able to drive the ball with just his arms like he did last year? Mm-hmm. That also part of this equation?
Yeah, I mean, again, I'm less concerned than you are. But I understand your concern. And it's also, his right arm was the one that was repaired. And though the belief is that there shouldn't be any issues with him swinging or anything like that, it is his lead arm.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
And right, so, I told the story before. My dad was left-handed in everything he did. The one thing he did right-handed was golf. Why? Because he used his left arm, his dominant arm, to pull the head of the club through faster. Mm-hmm. And that's something that, it's not just he's exposed Ohtani to getting hit on the arm by an inside pitch. It's that where is the strength and everything with that arm, because he needs that extension, obviously, especially with the way he swings. He needs to get that extension to get that barrel to the baseball, or he's going to run into some problems.
Indeed. So there you go. Those are some of the news and notes from around Major League Baseball. Real quick, we'll touch on some bullpen situations across the league, and we'll do our annual. It's been a while since we've really complained. We're doing a lot of player analysis, so I just got to make another pitch for everybody. You got to start right now. You have to mark it down in your minds, your memory, or on paper, or however you learn and however you digest information. You have to record it now, because we need to do solds leagues, saves plus holds. We told you this in the preseason. We do it every, you know, last few years. We developed this Burr Report. We have a bullpen coach over at elitefantasy.com. That's our daily fantasy baseball site. If you like this, my cash game breakdowns are always over there. If you want to make some money betting on the games, elitesportsbetting.com is the place to go, where we have baseball bets every single day. So you can make a lot of different ways to make money with us for the baseball season, despite this free podcast. But Ray, going back into it, man, you look at closers right now. Mm-hmm. Wow. It's just like, you know, Iglesias has been terrible. Now says that they're using him wrong because they're using him longer one inning. You know, Kirby Yates has been amazing to start the season, but we're seeing Kenley Jansen get hit. We're seeing Atlanta, where AJ Minter is supposed to be the closer. Okay, no, but, you know, Winkler is the guy. Oh, no, it's Luke Jackson the last couple of days. You know, nobody knows what's happening with the White Sox back into their bullpen. The Boston Red Sox is supposed to be Matt Barnes, but Brassier is getting all the save opportunities. The Mariners was, you know, losing Strickland, and then Swarzak was a close. Now Elias is the close. I mean, Josh Hader in Milwaukee is supposed to be a long reliever, but now he's only coming in. He won't even pitch unless they have a lead. Have you noticed that? I mean, what I'm talking about here, folks, is that roles of bullpens for over half the league, and it's not getting any better, are not defined. You know, certain lefties will come in against lefties, and maybe you have Hader that only will pitch with the lead for some odd, weird, strange reason all of a sudden. But the idea of a closer like we had 5-10 years ago is over. It's just over. There's a handful of guys you can count on to get ninth inning work religiously and nobody else be involved, and that's about it. So, Ray, people need to mark this period of time in their memory banks, because come next March, we're going to be doing saves only leagues once again.
Yeah. And I flat out said back in, I think it was March, February, I made a date up. I think it was March. I said, look, this is going to be the year where we finally say it's over with saves. We got to go to solds. And I don't know how many people are there yet or not, but we need to get there, because, you know, this is, and I do that update every Thursday on the closer grid. And, I mean, it's been almost half the season where almost half the teams to this point of the season, have either switched closers, been in the danger red zone all season long, or been in the nebulous, we're not quite sure what's happening, red wide area. Like, almost half the teams have for all the time up to this point. We're in the seventh week of the season. And I think the perfect example of what's going on is Raziel Iglesias, who shouldn't have said anything in the press. That doesn't help anything. Should have kept his mouth shut. Fine. It's interesting because I put that article out on Twitter, and I had a bunch of people coming back at me, and I said, look, I'm not saying he was right to do it, because he wasn't. And I'm not saying he's right to think it, because a manager should be able to bring his best pitcher, quote unquote, in whenever he wants. But again, you can't play spreadsheet baseball. Baseball players are human beings. Human beings, some of them don't care if it's Thursday or Saturday.
Jesus Aguilar, I don't know if they're all human beings.
Yeah, okay. Some people don't care if it's 1 a.m. or 6 p.m. They don't care. You know, they just don't care. They just do whatever they do. Barry Bonds could care less if people were trying to murder him from the seats and every person in the world thought he was a cheater. Didn't matter. He saw a fastball, hit a home run. Just how it was. Didn't matter to him at all. Other guys crumble under this. They can't handle it. They got to know. And with people being creatures of habit, using Iglesias, who is their best reliever with Cincinnati, using him in the seventh inning, using him in the eighth inning, using him in the ninth inning, using him when they're behind, using him when they're ahead, using him when they're tied, he mentally is having a really hard time with that. And that's why he went to the press and talked about it. And I think that's something we're running into all over the place. Guys don't know their roles. And again, if you want to play spreadsheet baseball, fine. But we have to react because that's the way most of these teams are handling it. They are playing spreadsheet baseball now. And with that being the case, unless we want to have everyone have to have five middle relievers and hope that your middle reliever gets nine saves to help you win a league, we really should start paying attention to holds and factoring that in so we can, again, return to the main point of this, which is getting the best group of relievers on our fantasy squad versus trying to figure out the spreadsheet that manager is using.
And it's to the point where obviously we know the issue with starters, and we're, you know, we talked half the show about Martin Perez, Anthony Descalfani, Chris Paddock. Like, we're talking about these sort of mediocre starting pitchers, even though Paddock's been phenomenal. But, you know, because they're so important, because hey, five innings of quality baseball is huge nowadays. But the bullpens are being utilized all the time, and best pitchers are pitching sixth inning, seventh inning, eighth, ninth. They're pitching all over the place. Lefties are coming in against righties, and righties against lefties. And, you know, I don't think it's a true testament to just say, oh, we got to get only saves, because it's random. You know, it's like saying who gets the most switch hitters out in a day. It's like, well, how do you measure that? It's really just arbitrary. You know, sure, you can count them up, but does it really matter? No, it doesn't. Yeah. So effectiveness, more important. And the guy gets a hold. We know it's a late inning. He held the lead. He did his job. That's what it should be. And you shouldn't be penalized for it. And you shouldn't profit just by lucking into Shane Flippin' Green of the Detroit Tigers, which is purely nonsensical. So just a call for all of that. I mean, look at the Tampa Bay Rays is another one. I didn't even mention that.
Oh, what a mess.
Alvarado. I mean, Alvarado is like, we're all ecstatic. The guy is out of control good. I don't think he's allowed a single home run all year long. He's got that sort of whatever the pitch is, screwball, I guess, right?
Almost, yeah.
Moves that way. Mm-hmm. It's so phenomenal, striking everybody out, but yet Diego Castillo has as many saves as him. So are you telling me that?
And don't forget Emilio Pagan, who all of a sudden is getting saves and holds on the same level as the other guys.
Three saves in the last inning pitched all of a sudden. So it's just, oy, it's a mess. And but again, who's leading AL East right now? It's, you know, it's a race. They obviously know a little something. This opening, you know, being an opener, bullpen by committee. They're doing it the right way. They're the future of baseball right now, Tampa Bay, believe it or not. They can't draw flies, but they're doing it, and we need to all catch up. Real quick, I got to touch on this because we are, what, 7 weeks into the season?
Yeah.
Ray Flowers is Dallas Keuchel, Craig Kimbrell. For one, are these guys ever going to sign? Oh, Keuchel came out in the press, which reminded me of it today. You know, saying, I will only take my deal. I will not go for cheaper. It's like, dude, that's – for one, that's the problem with rich people. Rich people won't do anything unless they absolutely have to because they're so used to getting paid so much for it. I find it to be hilarious. But from a fantasy standpoint, how much longer can we occupy these guys on a bench?
Yeah. I mean, I own Keuchel in one league. It's AL labor. He's on the bench. It is what it is. So I'm hoping he signs in the American League, and then it's been worth the wait. If you're in a mixed league, I mean, and you can't use an NA spot. A lot of leagues have that. I've never been in a league that has that. But a lot of leagues have an NA spot. Usually it's used.
Really?
Yeah. Have you used those?
No.
I've used ILDL spots, but an NA, non-eligible.
NA.
Wow. Yeah, not available.
Oh, my God.
Most teams use that. Most leagues use that, I think, for rookies. So they can hold, like, a minor leaguer on. They have, like, a minor league spot or whatever. Unless you have a league like that in a mixed league, I don't know why you're holding on to Keuchel, because even though he's on the side throwing every 5 days, doing his 90 pitches, you got to figure he throws, what, at least two games, I would assume, at least two games down in the farm before they say he's good to go. So even after he signs, you're talking a little 3 weeks before he's pitching. So, you know, I think you move on from him. In Kimbrel's case, I own him in multiple leagues, and I have held him in the multiple leagues I own him with. I think you have to get hold him if you can, because wherever he goes, and he will sign at some point, wherever he goes,
he's sure.
Close. You know, here's
you're
the
sure
thing.
He's going to. You're yeah. Sure he's going to sign and close.
Yes. Here's the thing. There's draft pick attached to these guys, right? And that's the problem. Teams have until the next draft. They have a responsibility to pay the previous team a draft pick if they sign these guys that have the tender on them. Keuchel is an example. Until June 2nd, you have to sign him and lose a draft pick. As soon as June 2nd, when the new draft begins in 2019, the draft pick goes away. So on June 3rd, half the teams in Major League Baseball are going to offer a contract to Dallas Keuchel and Craig Kimbrel. Now, whether or not it's a contract either one of them likes, or every team in baseball is going to be interested at that point because they're not going to have to pay – well, every team but the Indians who need a pitcher but say they can't afford it. They're all going to be interested because they will now be able to retain the draft pick. I assume – I really do believe this – that Kimbrel signs Jeff and he does become the closer. Are there 10 better guys than him? I don't think there are. So, I mean, where's he going to sign where he's not going to be? The Astros, the A's, the Indians, the Mets? I mean, it's the Dodgers? Like, but again, if you want to let him go, I mean, you are burning a roster spot. And if you don't, if you have, you know, injuries and you're up against it, I can understand letting both of them go.
Yeah, I mean, I think damage has already been done at this point. You're 7 weeks in the season with a, you know, spot that's on your bench that we've all needed. I don't know how much the return on either one of these guys really are. I agree with you that Kimbrel will be the more impactful guy most likely, but I'm starting to waver. You know, I'm almost wondering if, you know, he could sign on a contending team that already has a closer and just play a role. I think that
he could maybe do a 1 year deal for $7 million or something. He could.
If he gets $7-8 million for, you know, whatever, on a team that's poised to win a championship, you know, I think Dodgers or Cardinals or, right. Phillies. Somebody like that, maybe he goes that direction where he'll test free agency next year, tries to win a championship this year, and then doesn't necessarily have to close. He's just part of, you know, something good for half of a season. And it really – and being part of something good and being effective won't really hurt his value going into free agency next year either. So – you know, a lot of different ways to look at it, and it just the bloom is off the rose on these guys, and I'm really thinking it's time to start cutting bait because law of diminishing returns at this point. Like, you got to get these guys conditioned. They got to, you know, for Keuchel, you got to throw and you got to work your way up. It's like these guys do in spring in February, and here it's May and almost June. What's it gonna? I mean, half the season's gonna be over before we get anything out of him. And then what if he goes to a division and he has a couple bad matchups, and you get what? You get 16 starts out of a guy, and four of those are against really tough matchups like the Astros or the Red Sox or maybe the Rays. You know, what are you getting? 12 starts? You're holding a guy for 12 starts all year?
Right.
Lord, I don't know. So keep an eye on that. Keep an eye on us over at fantasyguru.com. We talk baseball 365 days a year. We have our chat room available to everybody. Just hop in, ask questions. You've got trade questions real time, man. We're there. Myself, Ray Flowers, Vlad Sedler, Ted Schuster, Benny Ricciardi, Draft Sheet, Peter Christensen. We all hang out there at various times. We've got more podcasts like this one at your disposal. Tons of articles every single day, tools, everything you need, and much low price, $19.99 the rest of the year to join us over at fantasyguru.com. If you're in the NFL, stick around, fantasyguru.com. We also have our football seasonal package available to everybody out there to get in now, because that price is only going up. We opened it up for like a month for early bird, and then we're going to raise it to, I think, $10 or $20 in a few weeks. So if you're listening to this, get in on that and join us for the football season as well. Ray Flowers, any final words before we let the kiddies go into that good night?
Yeah. Have a good day. No, I got nothing. It's been fun talking to you. Look forward to doing it every week. It's always one of the 62 most favorite things I have to do each week.
That's not bad. And that includes his weekends of different holidays and parties and drinking and all the good stuff.
I drank a lot last weekend. I got to be honest.
You do it every week. I got to be honest with you. Ray, we've been meaning to talk to you about this.
I got to go, Jeff.
Yeah, starting to get the shakes already after our podcast.
Yeah.
All right, guys, that's going to do it. Follow Ray Flowers at Baseball Guys on Twitter. Follow me at Jeff_Manns, M-A-N-S, right there for you. We'll see you over at fantasyguru.com. Till next time, for Ray Flowers, this is Jeff Manns. See you next time, everybody. Deuces.